Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 8:29 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, May 12th in the year of our Lord, 2020. Thank you for tuning in. Much appreciated. To preface this episode, I have a lot of big news, and I have a friend on the show, a friend and fellow comedian on the show who is promoting his new album, and I'll get to that in 1 second. But there were some technical issues, as some of you may know, because last week I recorded an episode on my phone that didn't sound as good, probably wasn't as good. Well, I got my hard drive repaired, but the reinstallment of the audio recording equipment program that I've used for close to a decade, it was just doing some funky, weird things while I tried to record with Chris, so I could only include really the first half of our conversation, which is good. We get into most... The second half was more us shooting the shit about movies and things, but the first half is sort of the more critical part. He sounds great because I had to use his audio that he recorded for me on his computer, and you can hear me. It sounds like he's crystal clear in a studio and I'm on a phone call talking to him for the first half. And then the second half of the episode, I am literally inaudible. So it just sounds like Chris having a conversation with himself. And though that might have been enlightening, I thought it would be a weird look at best to introduce him to some new listeners and old listeners, you know, who've been listening to me have heard Chris many, many times. We usually talk movies and comedy. But this time he has a brand new album out. It's called Failed Running Back. Not only did I get a free copy because I'm a powerful social media influencer, but I also bought it, pre-ordered it myself. I enjoyed it a lot. And I say that because I was going to say nice things about it anyway. I was going to say, support my friend. Come on, guys. Support comics. He's a good guy. He's doing good things. The album's awesome. But I'm telling you genuinely, I was having known him for a long time and knowing a lot of his material. I think he made great selections in terms of the material he used. It's a light sort of half-hour listen, but good to support. You know, if you like him, you can sample it or whatever. But it's pre-orderable on Amazon and iTunes as you listen to this now, and then Friday it's officially out. So we'd like to get him a nice debut on the charts. But I thought it was really funny. Like as a comic will, as a comedian friend will, I smiled and nodded during most of it in approval, but there were also multiple guffaws. I enjoyed it. I know you, it's sort of hard, I guess, to trust a comedian who's promoting a friend, but I'm as real as they get in this motherfucking business, okay? So, yeah, go support my friend. Go support another comic. Discover a new comic, if you will. But it's called Failed Running Back by Chris Lamberth. Available for pre-order on iTunes and Amazon right now. And will be, I'm sure, on other streaming platforms come Friday. But let's get those pre-orders up so this gentleman can have a nice debut. Because as you'll learn, he's supposed to be making his Broadway debut right now in the Layman Trilogy, a play that I had tickets for, not knowing he was going to... Well, actually, I saved the flyer to get tickets to it and was going to buy tickets. And then I found out after that he was going to be in it, that he got cast in it. And I said, holy shit, I was going to get tickets to see this anyway. Now I'm definitely getting tickets. And then the world crumbled. Everything got canceled except for my Twitter account, which blew up. So, in other words, this is a guy who was going to make a huge break during this time of the year. And can't, obviously. Hopefully the play, we talk about it a little bit, but hopefully the play is just postponed until things open up because it was a very hyped up play. So here, now I've both given you an endorsement and a sympathetic reason to go get his album. So do it, Failed Running Back by Chris Lamberth. We have a nice conversation. I apologize once again. Next week, I will be totally tech savvy again. But this was, you know, these last couple weeks with a broken computer and a new program that's not doing exactly what it used to. I always hate that when you're like, oh, I'll upgrade from version 10.0 to version 13.0. It's got to be better, right? And then it won't do the things that it did before. And I'm like, why is this not as helpful? Anyway, as far as I go, before we get to the Chris conversation, I actually recorded an intro for this last night and it was way too morose and angry. So I decided to scratch that. I didn't want Chris's album being introduced by me going off on a let's burn down the comedy world sort of rant. So what I will say is this week I have some more very big things coming up. I was on New York One yesterday on Monday, and that's available on their website under human interest because I'm interesting to humans, apparently. That sounded like a Mike Kaplan joke. But it was a really nice piece on me. That was cool. I think probably picked me up a couple new followers and a couple new album purchases. The album has been number one on Amazon comedy charts for like 12 days now, and it's still sitting in the top four on iTunes after like a four-day run at number one. It's really basically been in the top four or five. It's been in the top four for like 11 of the like 10 of the last 12 days, including now. So that's cool. I appreciate everybody who's bought the album or streamed it. To make a pitch for myself, obviously, if you visit iTunes to get Chris's album, maybe pick up mine as well if you haven't already. We're looking to make a nice statement on the Billboard charts, the Billboard comedy charts, which would be a great milestone for me to crack like the top 10 or top 5 of just because that's not algorithms. That's just sales and streams. But if you have bought it or you have listened to it or you just want to be a good friend or fan and you don't have the money or you don't like want to buy albums, you can still for free go on iTunes and give it a 5-star review. Even if you just reference my impression if you haven't heard the album or if you want to lie and say great album, the reviews also help. Ideally, you will purchase it on one of those two sites and give it a nice review on that site. But I know a lot of people have bought it on Amazon, so I'm at like 11 reviews there. I would love to get to like 30 or 40 reviews. Obviously, the reviews cost nothing. I think you have to buy the product. So if you have bought it or plan to buy it, coupling that with a review, very helpful. Keeps the album visible for people to see. And on iTunes, by all means, please buy it and definitely give it a 5-star review there. And if you stream it somewhere else, if money's tight or you just prefer to use your subscription, totally understandable, but maybe you could still leave a review on iTunes if you've heard it elsewhere. So that's my shameless sales pitch. As far as appearances this weekend, let's see, I was on New York One yesterday. You're listening to my podcast today. Tomorrow I'm on Howard Stern. So Wednesday morning I will be on Howard Stern for another appearance. And then I'm doing Todd Barry's podcast Wednesday afternoon. I'm not sure when that will go up, but that's another nice, cool thing. Todd Barry, a very funny comedian. I hope you're familiar if you're a comedy fan, but if you're not, super funny guy. Don't know him personally, but this is obviously my new reach and my new comedic skills have... My newly discovered comedic skills are obviously getting me in touch with a lot more people, which is cool. The only people not contacting me right now, there's only three groups of people not contacting me: agents, managers, and comedy club owners. In other words, the three people who could still hold my career in their hands once this is all done are the only people not contacting me. The Marc Maron episode I did, I don't know when that'll air. I hope sooner rather than later. It's timely because for half the episode, he's interviewing me as Donald Trump. So I think that will be a very great breakthrough, that episode, considering how large his listening audience is. So that could be another big thing. But it's, yeah, and then I'll be on Yahoo News program on Friday. So it's not bad for somebody with no PR, no agent, no manager. So that's good, I guess. Right? Right. Two gripes, and then let's get to Chris. I need to get these off my chest, but because it's not 1 a.m., I am not as angry as I was last night, so I'll try to keep this positive. First thing, New York Times. I am an at-home 7-day delivery subscriber. That's like the platinum level. I am giving the most money to New York Times that is basically possible, and without contributing to some sort of fund or grant. But I was contacted by the New York Times last week. I forget when, early in the week. And it was a photo editor, and they said, "Hey, for the comedy roundup, we'd like a picture of your special." Now, they meant the Trump album. But okay, I said, "Oh shit." So I had Aaron, the producer at Your Lucky Dog Productions, send them like the high-res pick of the album cover, and I figured, all right, you know what, pretty timely. It's a funny album we recorded in early February. The timing couldn't be more perfect for my career or to release it, as indicated by the robust sales. And I send it in, I go, "Hey, that's going to be great to get in like the New York Times as part of their album roundup. Cool." And then I look in the paper either Thursday or Friday, I forget which day already it was, maybe Friday, and it was I saw five different things. I saw Andy Kindler's album up. I saw Mike Kaplan's album up. I saw some one or two YouTube specials highlighted by people I'd never heard of, but who have like sort of similar followings as me. And Jerry Seinfeld's Netflix special, which I'm a big Jerry Seinfeld fan, and there were some good jokes in it. But if his name was not Jerry Seinfeld, that special would have been called Fine. So those five got their shine, and I didn't. And I've been very stressed and up and down over the last month and a half because I've been getting a lot of different opportunities. I am currently working on something that will pay me a boatload of cash. Like when I say, I'm talking a modest Silicon Valley investment in some of my videos. Okay, so by Silicon Valley CEO standards, it's pocket change. By Road Comic standards, it's, you know, a full year's worth of salary. And that's actually making me feel more pressure. So I was almost tempted to turn down some things that were going to pay me money just because I was like, you know what, I don't want... Like, I've gotten some voiceover stuff that will probably be in the works this summer. And there's these are not, trust me, this is not one of these like, oh, is JL going to be in a movie? No, it's not that, but it's really good. It's good money. It's a good opportunity. It's going to make 2020 an excellent year for me financially. But once again, as I always say, I'm about the career now. I'm not about having like a great year where I can sock away some money. That's of course great. And in this economy, in this time, I'm especially sort of lucky and blessed to have had all this happen by some sort of strange cosmic arrangement. But my goal is still the same. It's a stand-up comedy career. It's not to have a good year and then to be forgotten or not booked despite increasing a fan base and showing what I can do and having all the material that I've developed over the years. So the reason the New York Times thing bothered me so much is you get used to a lot of disappointment in this business. It never gets easy. Well, it never gets easy, but it gets easier because you start to just expect the least from the business and from people's motivations. But what annoyed me so much was like, you asked me for album artwork. Okay, so I'm thinking, well, I guess my album is going to be featured in the New York Times. Now, I didn't think that before. I just assumed, like a lot of the different things I've done, the Trump impression, the Louis C.K. video, that I would get some sort of mild, non-tagged recognition from the New York Times comedy writer, but never get any opportunity because most of comedy media is about access to comedy and propping up people who will get clicks and doing what PR people instruct you to do and what managers and agents instruct you to do. So, for instance, when I saw an article about some comedians who were doing a YouTube show during the quarantine, and they both have managers, agents, specials, etc. But then you look at the raw numbers that the series was doing, and they were like barely a blip in terms of YouTube numbers. Whereas, like, I know I'm in the 10 million views sort of across social media platforms kind of thing over the quarantine, and nothing, because all I have is people watching my stuff and quality stuff, but I don't have rabbis, managers, I mean rabbis in the colloquial sense of somebody advising and vouching for me, to say you should follow this guy. Because there's no benefit, there's no increased benefit from support, like promoting me to a media outlet, unless you think the content is good. But I don't have a team. I'm not repped by somebody who also reps, you know, Kevin Hart. So you're not going to get like some sort of, hey, we have a good relationship, maybe I can get him. It's me. You promote me, and that's what you're getting. You're getting me. You're not getting anything beyond me. If you think me and what I do is good enough, then great. Then you get that. But it was just very frustrating and really angered me because my thing was, don't bother me. You know what I mean? Like that's now what I kind of want to have. Like, is for people not, you know, I not to sound like already I'm turning into a recluse. This isn't about fans. This isn't about doing media appearances or producing content. This is, you're the New York Times. You know that an appearance in your paper would be significant. So just ask me for my shit when you know I'm going to be in. Don't, like, because I'm fine being left alone. My default is to be expected to be left alone by the New York Times until I have a major Netflix special or a TV show, and then there'll be a big profile, like they never knew who I was, even though they do. And it's that's okay. Like I my default is to be like, hey, you're not going to pay attention to me, and that's fine. Now I have at least fans and money and can work that angle. But to ask me for the picture and then to not use it, but to use, obviously promote people with connections and management and PR people, by the way, whose album sales I have crushed, you know, kind of sucks because you could leave me alone. I'm fine being left alone. But when you like, you get into my life and like ask me for something that gets my hopes up, as I like to say, to quote The Godfather, this I don't forgive. So I'll continue to subscribe to the New York Times, but I'm closer and closer to using the arts section as, toilet paper. So take that for what it is. People who work in comedy at the New York Times, you can consider me, never talking to you. Of course I can backtrack on that, right? You're not going to hold me to that, Righteous Prick audience. the other thing, and then we'll get to Chris, and that got angrier than I wanted, but trust me, not as angry as it was at 1 a.m. last night. But the other thing, and my girlfriend just went, oof. Now she doesn't know, but she can imagine. She was sleeping while I was going on my network, I'm mad as hell and not going to take it anymore rant. The other thing that's bothering me, and this is kind of funny, to be honest. Funny in like if I was watching a show about myself, I would laugh a lot. a lot of more people on Twitter are thinking I'm lip syncing my Trump impression, which at one point is a tremendous compliment to my impression skills and infuriating because now I am consistently getting buried underneath a particular person on Twitter and TikTok who's doing lip syncing videos. Now, for the record, when I saw the first lip sync video, I laughed. So this is not me being like, that ain't shit. There's room for all sorts of humor. And it was funny. I'll leave any critiques out, but it was funny. I laughed and I was like, boom, like. I selfishly didn't retweet because I was like, I'm trying to keep my page like me about me right now while I have this heat. So I'll retweet my friends and I'll retweet like my stuff. But I thought it was funny. But then over the last several weeks, I keep getting people tagging me going, JL, you're good, but this is better. And people going, labeling this person like the best Trump impersonator and the perfect Trump comedy. And I'm going, people writing to me saying you guys should collaborate. And I'm going, what are we going to collaborate on? I never thought this would happen. I never thought my impression could be so good that I would then lose points because 10% of the people watching it would just assume I was another lip syncer. Now, if you listen to the content, there's certain tells. One tell being he never actually says what I say. But what a weird dilemma. I feel like I'm both proud but angry because like every day I see more and more people retweeting like as the great Trump impersonator. I'm like, it's a lip sync TikTok. My shit is to use old hip hop vernacular off the dome with a pitch-perfect impression, and like I've buried every other Trump impersonator, and that's not easy to do because they had a two, three-year head start on me while I was languishing in obscurity, even though I shouldn't have been. So I have now gotten to the mountaintop only to be told that the guitar hero of impressionists is crushing the Slash of impressionists. Can you imagine walking up to Slash, and I'm using as a biracial icon myself, I'm going to use Slash as an example, walking up to Slash and being like, you know, you are so good at guitar, you should do a collaboration with my friend who just won a Guitar Hero tournament in Las Vegas. Slash would drink a bottle of alcohol and then hit you over the head with his spare guitar. Now, that's what I don't understand. Like, it's all fun. And it's like, I just don't understand, to be honest. I don't understand. And I guess maybe this is the beginning of the end already for my run, which, hey, thanks, guys. It's been a great run. But it's weird and it's a little frustrating, not because I have anything against this person doing it. Let them they're making people laugh. They're entertaining people. That's great. They entertained me. But it's one of those things where you go, yeah, but there's no comparison. Like, those are funny videos that not everybody can do, but a lot more people can do than what I'm doing. You know how many people can do what I'm doing? Me. So on that note, guys, go get my album,
go give the album 5 stars on one of those 2 purchasable platforms. And enjoy your week and stay healthy. A lot of content coming from me this week. Obviously Making Podcasts Great Again is doing well. We got our first sponsor, legit sponsor. So, and we're in talks for more. So that's, you know, the podcast has really grown. All those media, you know, Stern, Todd Berry, Mark Maron, Yahoo, a lot of things popping this week. And I guess that's all for me to promote. I've done a lot of promotion the last few weeks, so I appreciate all the support, and I appreciate you listening to me gripe. So here it is, the first half of Chris Lamberth and I talking about Broadway, comedy, his new album, Failed Running Back, and other things before it abruptly stops because I was no longer audible. So thank you for listening. Thank you for bearing with this episode. Please show Chris some support. Next week, I'll be back with a fully technically sound episode, and hopefully you remain subscribers to this, and this show can grow as well over the next several months. So thank you for listening. Enjoy Chris and I talking shop and his new album. Goodbye.
All right, everybody, welcome. And as promised in the introduction, it is my friend, fellow comedian, fellow soon-to-be breakout star during the quarantine, Chris Lamberth, whose new album arrives on Friday, Failed Running Back. I've already pre-ordered it, but I did receive a complimentary social media influencer copy from Chris to give my early reflections on it, and I was thoroughly pleased. I really enjoyed it. It's a 9-track album.
Yeah, it's a 9-track. I kind of call it like an EP because it's not a full hour. I kind of look at, since I never got the opportunity to do a half hour, you kind of figure that a half hour is about 22 minutes when it airs on Comedy Central or what have you. And then, so you get about 24 minutes of me doing some A material. And so if I would have gotten a half hour, this would have been something around the lines of what I would have been doing.
Awesome. Well, I did really enjoy it.
Thank you, man.
So I gave it the Righteous Prick seal of approval. Go get it. You can pre-order it on iTunes, Amazon, and what are just all the outlets?
All the outlets, at least currently right now, this will be up Tuesday, so it would be iTunes and Amazon, really. And then all the other media outlets once it gets released on the 15th.
Awesome. And having spent, I guess now we're working on day 10 at the top of the Amazon charts, and I finally got bumped out of the top 5 this morning, so hopefully my graces and power reflect upon your album sales as well. I got bumped out by Andy Kindler and Mike Kaplan, who both had albums come out.
Yeah, Mike is great. He was on my show last week, I talked to him, had a great conversation. Mike's great. I decided the 15th because I knew that you were dropping one, and I knew that Mike was dropping one on the subsequent week. So I just said, well, let me see if I can get the 15th and try to knock down some titans on my week and try to get that weird algorithm to work in my favor for once.
Yeah, no, I couldn't get everything lined up, but I'm going to be on this week, I guess I'm going to be on Todd Berry's podcast, Howard Stern, and I don't know when the Marin episode airs, so I'm hoping that gives me a renewed life. But I'm not going to go into this. You'll hear in my intro what one of my big gripes is, but it involves the New York Times.
Oh, okay.
But this is about you right now. I'll do a 10-minute intro to be all about me.
That's fine.
But this is about Chris Lamberth. So I did enjoy the album. I do recommend it. I smiled at a lot of it, but that's because I know you. But I did have multiple laugh out louds. So that's
cool.
Good.
Cool.
I had like laugh out louds where I was like nodding, and then my girlfriend looked at me and she was like, "What's that?" And I was like, "Chris's album. It's funny."
But that's how we are. Like, I mean, some of those bits, I think you know most of them, because like I was trying to put a full length recording together since maybe like 2016, 2017, just getting the hour down to what I was going to be doing. And then in 2017, I started getting acting work. So yeah. The thing that I've been doing since I was 12 finally happened for me getting like parts on TV shows and movies. What I thought was going to happen to me in my early 20s happened to me in my late 30s. So then comedy kind of had to get put on the back burner for a little bit. But I was still doing comedy, but I wasn't ready to do an album because I wanted to put all the time that I needed to in there. And then I felt like I was being too precious with my material too. And so like this whole project is basically my reaction to the pandemic, which was to say like, you know, if I were to die, you would just get hours of me blabbing on a podcast, which was to some people was entertaining. And then maybe a couple movie roles that I was in, TV and film stuff, with me saying two or three lines of exposition. So I was just like, you know, I want to put this part of me out for the world to consume and just to say I was here. Do I want to make money? Do I want the album to do well? Of course I do. But I think overall it's just to be like, hey, this was me. This is me that I dedicated a lot of my life to. This is a part of me that, you know, I want to share with everybody and to make people laugh. So this was my brave response to the pandemic, to the Rona.
That's right. No makeup, natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
And your first EP.
Yeah.
No, it's good stuff. I felt like you really like, obviously you have more material to select from.
Yeah.
So I thought you made very good selections.
Thank you.
In terms of what you included and what you made of it. And a funny cover and a funny album title.
Yeah. I really like the artwork was done by Diego Pimentel, who's an upstate New York artist. He does a lot of the artwork for Laugh It Up Poughkeepsie, and they commissioned him to do their artwork. And I kind of just like that was like one of my favorite jokes, like the failed running back bit chunk about like me and my dad. I came up with that bit like I always try to, because I think sometimes, and I know you can relate to this, sometimes you feel like you're unheralded. And so, like, you don't get the respect that you deserve. I don't know if I carry it well, but sometimes I feel like I have a chip on my shoulder a lot that I don't often share with people. Right. So it's like you're trying to get Montreal, you're trying to get this acclaim that like, your other friends that are older than you, that have been in the game a little longer, that they've done. And so I remember, like, in 2015, I had a... I was working with Paul Verzi, a good friend of mine. He had a benefit for his brother-in-law that passed away, and he had it at Levity Live, and Bill Burr was headlining. And that was a big deal for me. And that one, that he asked me to be on that show, and two, Bill Burr is closing out the show. And I just figured like, well, I'm going to make this my set to be like, a night of too many stars, like a benefit, and you see somebody do some material and you want to kill and you want to do well. And that was like that chunk was like the centerpiece of what I did. Like, that was the first time I did that show, did that bit in front of a large crowd, and it went well. So that's a bit that I'm really proud of. And it's just kind of like something when you're a kid, you think that you're going to be an athlete. Like, most black dudes think they're going to play in the NFL or the NBA, and I got a rude awakening like when I was like 10 or 11. So, you know.
Yeah, no, I had a similar experience when I went to five-star basketball camp before my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And I played against Ron Artest.
Oh, man.
Who was basically like the same size I would be after 4 years of college weightlifting. Like, I was a strong, muscular dude after 4 years of college.
I'm, yeah,
like, oh, now I'm finally 17-year-old Ron Artest level.
yeah.
But I did love it when some guy on my team, like, it's so funny that the higher up you go, you know, I had a lot of physical growth to do and skill development still.
But yeah.
Like, you know, I was a good shooter. I had some skills. Like, I was better than the average person, but I was by no means a star of any measure. But when you see that up close, when you become like just the scrappy, like, I'm going to get this rebound and make a good outlet pass.
Yeah.
Damn, I'm a scrub.
Yeah.
Even though in my park, I'm like raining threes and like bombing people underneath. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, wait, did you see that, coach? I dove for that loose ball. I'm contributing.
Yeah.
I remember this dude on my team caught an alley-oop dunk, like this unheralded dude from Alabama. All I remember is from Alabama. His name was Bob. He was like 6'5", and he caught a reverse alley-oop on our test. And this was like our test going into his McDonald's All-American senior year.
Yeah.
And I just remember being, and Bob was this like, quiet dude. And I was just like, in my head, I'm like, I hope that dude got a scholarship somewhere. Like, he won the camp week, like, unsung hero, like the dude nobody had heard of before camp.
Yeah.
So that those camps, usually, if you get recognized like that, like, schools are going to be sending you letters and asking you to visit. So I have no idea what his last name is. So I just have to be like, class of 97, Bob from Alabama. Let me look him up. There'll only be like, you know, 40,000 of them probably.
Yeah, there's stories like that on I was just listening to Gary Owen on his podcast talking about some kid that played with Zion, and his son played AAU, or Gary knew the family or whatever, and he was just talking about how this kid's like, he's good, but he's not that good. And then he made it. He did well in one of those camps and just made a name for himself. Now he's in the NBA. Like, I don't remember the kid's name, but he was just like, this kid's not that good. And then he sees him, like, you know, just kill it.
Right. That's what people are going to say about me. They're like, all it took was, you know, him walking 90% away from comedy, moving to New Jersey, a global pandemic. And then all of a sudden people are like, where have you been, dude? You're the best. And I'm like,
yeah,
I've been here depressed for a decade.
Yeah. It's always like, but I think the thing about you, though, is that you just kept going. And that's kind of how I felt about it, too, because I think we're similar in a lot of ways, even though I think you're more open about it. So I think now that your stock has risen, I almost have to feel like I have to take your mantle of being the Eeyore of comedy. So,
well, you can't come for the crown yet. Maybe this is like my last dance of being like a bitter, angry comedian, but yeah, I still have fuel. And by the way, the only people who have not contacted me, I'm talking celebrities, comics, podcasters, blah, blah, blah. The only people who have not contacted me fall into three groups.
Okay.
Agents, managers, and club owners.
Mm.
The only three groups that I've still, like, the only three groups that can really prevent me from having an actual a career that I want.
I should say.
I'm making money, and I'm doing social media and YouTube and Cameo and all that stuff, and that's paying, but that's not comedy. That's like, that feels like I won like a 2-month lottery ticket.
Yeah.
That's not career. That's okay, time for that next step. Now, I know we can't do any of that yet, but it'd be nice if someone, to me, I find it kind of strange, the amount of people who've contacted me of all walks of life and all levels, but still, like, no one wants to rep me. Nobody's even curious.
I think they're kind of waiting for the smoke to clear in a lot of ways. But then at the same time, you do hear about people making deals and stuff for TV shows and all this stuff. So it's like they're behaving like the NFL, as if things are going to, like, just snap back into the back into place. Like, the NFL, like, I would like to see that happen, but I don't think we're getting a vaccine in August. So it's just kind of like, it's like you guys are being really arrogant right now.
Yeah. Oh, I do want to highlight something for my listeners who may not know this, and I don't want to bring up a bad subject, but it's something I think worth showing your increased clout in the acting world. I've had tickets to many things canceled over the last few months. But one of the more disappointing things was a big play coming to Broadway called The Layman Trilogy. And I had actually gotten tickets. Like, I held the ticket thing because I'd heard a lot of good things about it. So I was going to order tickets. And then you told me, like, as I'm going to order tickets, you said, oh, I'm in this play, The Layman Trilogy. I was like, get out of here. I was going to go see that going to go see that. And now you're in it. And so that's to let everybody know this was a major Broadway production.
Yeah.
And like Tony Award hype.
Directed by Sam Mendes. Directed by Sam Mendes.
Oh, sure.
Simon Russell Bill.
You may know as the guy who choked and didn't win Best Director for 1917. No, I'm kidding. 1917 is an amazing movie.
Yeah.
It was just Parasite's year. But like, you know, basically you're talking about the guy who wanted a nomination, an Oscar for American Beauty.
Right. Yes.
And was nominated for 1970. So this is an A-list Hollywood director with a Tony sort of, if not a front runner, definitely going to be nominated.
Yeah.
And we're talking about something good, obviously. You've been getting a lot of acting work. You have a new album coming out. But what's the deal with the play? And I guess I normally don't ask questions like this. I'm being too formal. I'm like, so how did you process that? What was your journey like finding out that the play was either postponed or canceled? Or what's going on with it? Because that is the kind of thing, if you were me, that's how we know that I'm just a little shade more negative, at least outwardly, because I'd be like, fuck Broadway.
Yeah.
You know what? Sam Mendes, maybe if you had won the Oscar, you would have had the clout to keep this shit open for my Broadway debut. I'm done. I'm done with acting. All of you can go fuck off and watch YouTubers. I'm out.
Yeah.
That's me, though. I would have been so full of, like, why is this happening?
Well, I mean, it's one is that it's happening to everybody, and then there's people that are dead. So it's like,
well, then they can't get the part anyway.
Yeah. Well, one day I'll have to I'll tell you the story. I don't think I can tell this story on the show, but we can talk about it off mic. But one thing is, we were in previews when it happened. And the night that Tom Hanks got said, you know, got diagnosed or said he had it, we were in the dressing room and I was on Twitter. I was like, oh, Tom Hanks has it. Oh, shit. The NBA is shutting down. I was like, oh, and I guess I was like, OK, looks like we're next. And that was on a Wednesday and we were in previews and I had an audition in Lower Manhattan on that the following Thursday. I think that was the 12th or the 13th. I'm not 100% sure, but we were had an audition. I went to the movies to see Bloodshot. Can you believe that's the last movie I saw in the theater? And then I got an email saying that the shows, you know, everything shut down, and for the foreseeable future, I did get an email from the stage manager. And he basically said he doesn't really know anything. Nobody knows anything. Like the Broadway League, you know, we heard June 7th, and then they said, well, they said that's not true. So we don't know. Like, we don't know anything yet. We don't know if the show's coming back or what's going to happen. But was I bummed out? Yes.
Because for you, that's a Broadway debut. That's not just, hey, this was going to be, that's a Broadway debut. That's a major credit and
yeah.
milestone, really.
It is.
So as much as there are other people who've had similar, everybody's out of work, like, so to speak, it's not the same as if, like, Bryan Cranston had a play canceled. It's like, okay, so
right.
you cry over your Emmys and Tonys.
Yeah.
This was, like, a new level. This was, like, a new milestone that's at least delayed, hopefully just delayed.
Yeah, I'm hoping so, too. But, it was something that I never thought was going to happen. Like, I started doing theater when I was about 12 or 13 years, 12 years old. And like in school and going through like high school and college, and it was my identity. It was when I was found out that I was a failed running back all those years ago. This was something that was just acting was something that I could cultivate and continue to grow at and to continue to just take it up to the next level. And then, you know, moving to New York, I was living in Chicago, got my master's degree and was a professional actor and stuff, moving to New York to try to take it to the next level. It was stagnant for a long time. And then when this happened, you know, I would see friends that were on Broadway. I was just thinking that was something that would happen to other people and not me. And I got a chance to audition for this show. And I said, well, it's kind of like, you know, I'm an ensemble member. It's not a big part. There's no lines, but I'm going to give it a go. And it was like, and I found out that I got it. I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And it was what I thought was going to be like, I get in the union and now I can be a working actor in theater and get to do all these shows at these regional theaters and just get to, you know, cultivate that and have a career. and leave the day job.
Williamstown Theater Festival credits.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's kind of what I was gunning for, because I was thinking.
For those listening that maybe are new to the show, I went to Williams College, so I've been to the Williamstown Theater Festival a couple of times, and obviously it would be worth another trip up there if there was a Chris Lambert production.
Yeah, yeah, and it's beautiful up there. I love it. I love the Berkshires, and I was there last. I went there last year to see Andre Brower in a show. And yeah, like that was the thing. It wasn't like I'm going to be a star. It was just like, oh, I can get in the union. I can be seen by these casting directors and get auditions and be able to, you know, earn, you know, try to earn some roles, like on a bigger level. So yeah, it was disappointing. Also financially, it was disappointing too, because the money that was coming in was like, oh, this is good. I can actually live like a human being. And right. in the New York City area. So, but I'm hoping it comes back. But, you know, if not, it, I think maybe it can happen again if we all get back to some sense of normalcy.
The only thing I'm hoping with Broadway theaters, and you're a big guy as well, is that this will not allow them to make child size seats anymore.
Yeah.
Where it's like if you're over 5'10 or heavier than 200 pounds, good luck. Enjoying the show.
It's hard, dude. It's so hard. Like, I like those end seats. I mean, the last time I was uncomfortable, I went to see American Son. I went to see Kerry Washington in that. And that was like, I was in the front and there were no seats in front of me. But then the stage was like right on my knees.
Right.
It's just so awkward. And sometimes, I don't know if you can speak to this. Sometimes the up in the balcony, the mezzanine, if you get a side seat there, that might be the best option sometimes.
My favorite show that I saw in the last year, my favorite show since Hamilton is Ain't Too Proud,
okay.
Patience musical, which I know is not classical theater, but my goodness, it's an incredible show. And we sat in the seats, and I remember I was standing with my girlfriend, because I never sit down until the show's about to start.
Just yeah.
If I'm going to get locked in, I want it to be as little time as possible. And I saw a guy who was about 6'1", walk into our row. Skinny guy, too.
Yeah.
He sits down mid-row, and my girlfriend, Laura, like said, hey, look. And I looked. His knees were against the chair.
Yeah.
In front of him. He was 6'1", which is not short, but it ain't. 6'1" is like I'm a normal person,
right?
And I'm skinny on top of that. So I took pictures of it. I couldn't actually sit down in my seat. Like width was like comfy but possible, but I literally couldn't because my knees were wedged
right
into the seat in front of me before I could slide down. And I couldn't. It was too tight for me to even like spread my legs around the seat for what I call doggy style theater seating.
Yeah.
So I couldn't even do that. So they had to sit me in a balcony, like a free chair, one of those like little, you know, like I needed the binoculars.
Yes.
Kind of thing,
yeah.
Fancy seats, and that was beautiful. But I'm going, this is crazy. But because they added those premium seats in theaters, I think what happened was not only are those the better view seats; those are also seats where you get more leg room.
Right.
Like, in other words, if we're going to charge you $200 extra, it can't just be a good seat. It has to be a more comfortable seat. So they've had to, like, reduce already tight seating in a lot of other seats.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they have to do something, like, legally about that. Because it's like, if a 6'1 dude looks like me in a chair, then that's not a good, that's not a for $100 or $120, that's not even enjoyable.
Yeah, it's especially
and for some people. It's not even physically possible.
Right.
It's about somebody who's like, oh, I'm 400 pounds and I can't fit most places. I'm talking about even if you're fit and 6'1",
yeah,
these seats are like a struggle.
Yeah, it's you kind of see the industry behind it a lot of times where it's like they pack all these people in and it's just like you because you know like a performer like the art and I'm doing my craft and I'm doing this thing and it's a beautiful thing but then it's like industries like get all these people in as much as possible everybody gets in you know and the, I'm sure you paid at least anywhere between $300 and $500 for those seats probably
for the premium seats
yeah
oh yeah I mean the only time I did it for like an anniversary gift I've never bought premium seats.
Mm-hmm.
except when I wanted to go see the Harry Potter play.
Okay.
And we took a day off of work and we did like both parts and dinner in between.
Yeah.
And I just said, well, I could get regular seats for like 3 months from now, or I could just get the premium seats now. And I said, let's do the premium. So that's the only time I've ever done that. And they were great.
Yeah. Like,
they were good seats. So, but that's also a theater that's a little newer.
Yeah.
Whereas these old 1940s theaters are like, they're never going to redo them because, you know, they why do they want to, they don't want to fit fewer people.
Right. Yeah.
So, I don't know, but I was looking forward. I had an aisle seat for the Layman trilogy. Who's to say if it was a good aisle seat? Or a, is that, was it the theater where Rent was playing for a lot of years?
I don't know. I think the it was the Niederlander, and I know before that it was Pretty Woman, I think.
Okay, but, yeah, no, Rent, I think Rent ran there for a long time when Rent was like a big play. As everybody knows from Teen America, I prefer Lease, where everyone's got AIDS.
I'm sure. I think it probably was where that was at, yeah.
But see, I went to see Rent with my college girlfriend when I was, you know, a fit college athlete.
So yeah.
I was just like, these seats are a little tight for my guns.
Yeah. No, they're very small.
I am oozing into my chair and my knees hurt.
The seats are very small. I think in general it's like that.
They've got to bring it. I hope they bring it because that wasn't. I know it's probably a matter of obviously some of the stars of the play commit to other projects and things like that. But I hope they bring it back because it really was this very hyped up drama.
It's very good. Like I'm not saying it just because I actually got to see them. It's Simon Russell Beale, Ben Miles, and Adam Godley, who played who was on Breaking Bad. He was one of the Grey Matter people. You know, he was.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. He's the husband of of that married couple that ran the company.
Yes, yeah. He took the girl Gretchen from Walt, basically.
Thank you for bringing that up because I remember looking at the poster and going, I've seen that guy and stuff.
Yeah, and they were really nice. They were like, and they're all from the UK. They're like, you do comedy. We have to come see you. You know.
Oh, he's British?
Yeah, they're all British.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Started in London, but I didn't know if that was like a British thing or if it was like just that's where the first run was.
Yeah, and it's just the three of them, and they're creating all these characters, and it's brilliant. It's fascinating. And you can hear them the way that they, you know, the language that they use, the way that they, you know, say their lines. It's awesome. They're incredible. So it's I hope people get to see it. I hope it comes back just for, you know, for them and for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the other people and other cast members, like people in the ensemble. Yeah.
So how other than giving the Heisman to Dan Enfield when he wants to Zoom chat with us. how are you staying sane?
I think
I'm giving him the Heisman as well, so I don't want to just throw you under the bus.
No, I love Dan. I mean, he.
I know. I'm just. That's an inside joke.
Yeah. Friend. He knows. He knows he can always call. You know. I don't have a problem.
He just gave a rave review to Quiz Show this morning.
I saw that. Yeah. Yeah.
I really think he should have a podcast called, if he could commit to it, a podcast called Cold Takes, where it would become this like quirky, like Nathan for You / Joe Para kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, listen to his podcast review things from like 1987 and 1995 that he's just discovered.
That John Turturro guy is going places.
Johnny Depp, that movie is incredible.
Yeah.
Yes. I saw it so long ago, I forgot it, Dan.
I mean, he's not wrong. Quiz Show is fantastic.
Quiz Show is awesome. It's just funny to hear that. It's like, are you in a time capsule? Like, you have these. He once said something about, like, my God, was it like Tony Parker on like a group text? It was like, Tony Parker's incredible point guard. I'm like, yes, welcome to 2007 NBA basketball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
he's retired now, and he's like discovering him on like NBA Classic or something.
I mean, I know that we have like 7 or 8 years on him, but like but then at the same time, it's like, dude, you should have seen some of this shit.
But he's a married father who's in pop culture, and
he's
also like he has kind of an older vibe.
Yeah,
and I always forget that he's younger than us.
Yeah,
so it's always startling when he's like, you guys. Back to the Future. Have you seen this movie? Hilarious.
Ever heard of it?
tangent. What are you doing to stay sane and to stay safe?
Well, the day job is helpful because I've been working from home. Yeah, and it's like I've been logging in more hours than I was when I was actually going physically in the office, and like I have a position where it's like I'm doing a lot of behind the scenes stuff, like technical stuff, and so I'm not emailing people all day, and it almost doesn't look like I'm doing work, but like some people will try to email you all day and say, hey, look. This thing, it's like, stop showing, you're not doing shit. You're just sending emails. So for me, I've just been focusing on that. And like a lot of the things that I want to do at work, I'm able to do it. And I just try to focus and lock in on what I can do. So just trying to accomplish things at work has been good. That keeps me sane. And then The Last of Us Part 2 is something that I'm looking forward to. And I've just kind of been excited about that. So that's like something to look forward to in another few weeks.
What comes, and for those that don't know, Last of Us 2 is a sequel to a really one of the greatest video games ever made.
Yep.
When I used to put out my favorite things of a year list on my blog, that was whatever year The Last of Us came out, whether it was 2013.
Yes.
Something like that. 2013.
Yep.
That was my number across all pop culture, movies, music, TV. The Last of Us was my number one thing of 2013. It's an incredible game. I have mixed feelings about them making a sequel.
Yeah.
I trust that they'll do it. I don't want this to be the Big Little Lies season 2 of video games.
Right.
Where I look and say, you could make a sequel, but you could also leave it alone because it was perfect.
And that's what a lot of people are upset about, because the game, 2 weeks ago, there were these huge leaks of plot.
Yeah, I don't know why people, I don't understand why people do. I ignored them. Once I saw like what it was about,
mm-hmm.
I just stopped reading because I was like, that's like why, I don't get why people, I genuinely don't understand why people do that. Like adult people. Like
yeah.
If you're 8 years old and you want to like tell a secret.
Yeah,
but I don't understand how adults do this.
It's
movies or video games.
It's a lot of this shit about like, it's almost like they said that, okay, there was this expose written of like maybe late last month where, or maybe a couple months ago, where Naughty Dog is treating their employees wrong, like in crunch time when the game is about to go gold, when the game is ready to be sold. There's this period called crunch where the employees are grinding to get this game done. And they were talking about how their practices aren't very good and people aren't, you know, they're just saying like the company's not as pristine as they claim to be. So that was one thing. And then they pushed, the game was supposed to come out February 21st, my birthday, and it got pushed back to May 29th. And then in between that time, you know, all this stuff was going on. They said Naughty Dog's not treating their employees right, blah, blah, blah. And then people got upset about that or claimed to be upset. Then about 2 weeks ago, which was like late April, leaked an hour and a half of footage and the plot details. And a big character that was supposed to be like a mystery, her character name was essentially the mystery woman, that got revealed, and it was just a shitstorm of angry dudes on YouTube complaining about it, saying that they're not going to get it, which is bullshit because they're going to play it. And it's been a shitstorm. I looked at some of the footage and I'm kind of bummed that I was spoiled, but at the same time, it looks fucking great. It looks like it's amazing. And it's like, I'm kind of like, I feel the same way that you feel about it. I feel like, okay, they could have left it alone, but if they want to, it's their story to tell. So if they're going to take it in this this direction by making a sequel, I'm going to be here for it. So that's definitely keeping me like, I guess my insane obsession with this game is keeping me sane in this pandemic.
All right, guys, that was it for me and Chris. Thank you for listening. Also, be sure to check out his podcast, The Mundane Festival, which is available wherever you get podcasts. And thank you to Chris. I apologize that the audio went out, but I think we got all the pertinent information, all the album information, all about his Broadway work. And most importantly, I thought it was very fitting and interesting that the game that he loves so much, The Last of Us, was like the last talking point before I became inaudible. So I thought at least that works as a sensible ending if you know Chris. But thank you for listening. Once again, I apologize for the technical difficulties to Chris, to Chris's fans, to my fans. But we'll be back next week. I'll be back with a technically sound, probably angry, hopefully funny episode of Righteous Prick Podcast. So until then, I will see you next Tuesday.